professionals at Barry Electric and Lighting help you find the right product at precisely the right price while supplies last during this huge showroom display sale. Barry Electric and Lighting also has the very latest in LED lighting, silent ventilation products, built-in vacuum systems, and lighting controls. They have thousands of products to help make your home truly special. It's the showroom display sale, only at Barry Electric and Lighting on the Barry Montpelier Road, online at barryelectric.com.
All right, we're back, and let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome. Welcome back to the program. I have to say, one of the best guests we've ever had on the program, not to put any pressure on him. Let's say good morning to Alan Rabinowitz, who is the author of An Indomitable Beast, The Remarkable Journey of the Jaguar. But you may recall Alan's incredible story. As a child, he suffered just a terrible stutter, was mocked and ridiculed by his friends and peers, and really found solace with the animals, particularly those at the Bronx Zoo, who he was able to communicate without any sort of stutter, which is so incredible, Alan. And then he promised them that he would take care of them in return, which he has done. And Alan has spent some 30 years, he was with the Wildlife Conservation Society, and he has helped to protect many animals out there, including the jaguar. What an incredible story, Alan. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Will you just remind our listeners, so how was it that you, how do you think it was that you were able to communicate with the animals and not with people?
Well, that's fairly common among stutterers. We didn't know, back when I was a child, they didn't know that stuttering actually had a genetic component to it. There's a piece of real stuttering which is actually neurological. People thought it was purely psychological. Now, a large part of stuttering is psychological, because once the neurons misfire in your brain, how you feel about what's happening as a child really leads into whether you're going to be in a block, a bad stuttering block, or maybe work your way through it. With the animals, they don't judge you. They look at, and anybody with a pet dog or cat knows this. When you're feeling bad, the best thing to be around is your animal. There's a love there that you don't have to give back in any other way. There's no judgment. There's no expectations. That's what I, as a child, felt around animals, which I got the opposite from with human beings. Human beings instantly judged me as something wrong with me, as being retarded, as being broken.
Broken, yeah, that was the word. Ugh.
Well, at the time, yeah, I was put in special. At the time, they didn't understand a lot of things, such as dyslexia or ADD or even different kinds of autism. We were all put in those broken classes. But the animals looked at you for who you were. And all of them, my animals were green turtles and chameleons and garter snakes and hamsters. I couldn't talk fluently to them because I was still a stutterer, but I could speak full sentences, something which I couldn't even do with human beings.
Mm-hmm. And then you took this really intensive course up in upstate New York that your parents found out about that really helped. What did they do to help you with your stuttering?
Well, that was an experimental course at the time. Now it's a very well-known and utilized technique of actually controlling the movements of your mouth. While you can't do anything about the misfiring of the neurons in the brain for your speech, what that leads to are these hard contacts, such as your tongue against your upper palate, your lips coming together. And if you're aware of that, and you have to think about it, you can then mentally control how much contact there is. So while a normal speaker never has to think about their speech, I always have to think about it. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not thinking about it as much as I should, because I'm able at this point in my life to go more on automatic pilot. But I am thinking about it, especially being interviewed with you. Mm-hmm. So I will have little stuttering. If I want to, I can control it completely, as I've just started doing right now.
Right.
And I will have no stuttering whatsoever, but this is incredibly difficult. It takes a lot of effort because I have to be thinking about exactly how I'm saying what I'm going to say, as well as thinking about what I'm going to be saying to you. So it takes a lot of work, and I practiced, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of hours I spent by myself in front of a mirror practicing how to speak.
Wow.
And that's what got me to where I am today. I'm still a stutterer, and if I let go of everything, I can have some bad stuttering blocks, but I can control it now.
Is it any easier you doing an interview with me? We've done it a second time, and that you have, I think, confidence to know I'm not going to judge you?
No, it's funny that way now. It's I actually have to be more careful when I'm comfortable with someone or something now, because I let my guard down. If I'm very, very nervous, way back when in the early days when I wrote my first book, Jaguar, and I was asked to go on a live morning TV show, they actually asked me to guarantee that I wouldn't stutter. That was the most nerve-wracking thing that could happen. But I can control when I'm very aware of what I have to do. I can control it better. When I'm comfortable with somebody like you, I tend to let my guard down, and it'll creep back in, and then I'll have to catch myself.
All right, don't think about stuttering. Don't think about the 800-pound jaguar in the room. The ultimate challenge, though, that you had, which you write about in the book, an indomitable beast, is this experience you have in Belize, where you're trying to argue to the government that. You have 50 minutes to make an argument to create this preservation area. And talk about pressure. How'd you deal with that?
I knew I had to. All I thought about was I had made a promise to these animals. Here was an opportunity to give them a home. At the time, there was not a single protected area in the world that had been set aside just as a specific home for the jaguar. And I had found this incredible area in Belize. There were jaguars all over Belize, so I knew it would be difficult because at the time, Belize didn't have any protected area system. It wasn't as if I was just adding a new protected area. They had virtually no protected areas. There was no such thing as ecotourism at the time. It wasn't a term that was used. So I just had to make a plea for the jaguar, and based on what I could tell them would be good for the country and how money would come in and people would come in, I thought it was only going to be to the prime minister, which was enough pressure by itself. But then the prime minister told me that he didn't want to make that decision by himself, so the whole cabinet, I was asked to appear before an entire cabinet meeting. And I was only given 15 minutes because usually they didn't allow any outsider into a cabinet meeting. And I just knew that I had to go into maximal control, but I also knew that when I got worked up and passionate that I lost myself sometimes. And I did not want to. These were people judging me for who I was, not just what I had to say, but who I was. So if I went into a bad stutter, I knew that the detractors would use that against me.
How threatened is the jaguar today, Alan?
Well, it's not as threatened as some of the other big cats, which is very good. It's actually classified as threatened. It's not classified as endangered or critically endangered, which is terrific. The tiger is in very, very bad shape, and I've spent years studying and trying to save the tiger as well. That animal we're having a difficult time saving. Lions are in bad shape, which people don't even realize. Leopards are in better shape than the other two, but they're being killed constantly, more than even jaguars. With jaguars, we have a problem of people killing them constantly, despite laws that protect them. But there are still tens of thousands of jaguars out there scattered over two continents, from Mexico through northern Argentina. So that's very good, and that's lucky. The reason for that is fascinating, and it's what I document in the book, which people don't realize. The reason that jaguars are actually doing better has to do with historical luck, if you want to call it that. It turns out that by the time that the Spanish and Portuguese colonists came in and started conquering the New World in the 15th century, that the tens of millions of indigenous people who were already here had desecrated large areas of the environment. Basically, the jaguar had been wiped out from Mexico and much of Central America. And the colonization of the New World, sadly, as they brought over all these new old world diseases like measles and typhoid and diphtheria, it wiped out virtually 95% of the indigenous people. So with the death of tens of millions of indigenous people, all the forest came back in Central America and Mexico, and the jaguar was able to have a second chance. So the jaguar that actually now lives in Central America and Mexico came from South America in order to repopulate that area.
And is that really only where they are? I mean, are there any in Asia or Africa or any other part of the world?
No, each part of the world, each major area has got its own biggest cat. The tiger is the biggest cat of Asia. The lion, of course, the biggest cat of Africa. The jaguar is the biggest cat of the Americas. The jaguar is the third largest cat in the world after tigers and lions, but it's the largest cat in the Western Hemisphere. Next, of course, is our mountain lion.
What distinguishes a jaguar from a tiger? I mean, they look pretty darn similar.
Well, actually, the jaguar could be called the tiger of the New World. That is, it's a massively strong, potentially vicious predator. It's so powerful. Jaguars, the tiger has the strongest jaws because of its size of any big cat in the world. But the jaguar actually has stronger jaws. It's got the strongest bite, stronger jaws per pound of body size of any big cat in the world. It's a massively strong animal. It kills unlike any other big cat. Tigers, as big and powerful as they are, like lions, when they kill, go for the soft tissue of the throat, choking an animal and dragging it down.
Uh-huh.
Jaguars only kill one way. They go for the bone. They go for crushing a skull or crushing the spinal vertebrae and breaking the neck of an animal.
Wow. Huh.
And that takes incredible power.
I'm wondering kind of which way I'd rather go.
It would probably be faster with a jaguar.
Okay.
You might not like how it sounds, but they kill so quickly, it would be much more instantaneous than being choked and brought down.
We're talking with Alan Rabinowitz. He's the author of An Indomitable Beast, The Remarkable Journey of the Jaguar. So, Alan, there's this picture in the book here where you've got a jaguar leaping for a piece of food that's hanging from a tree. This animal is in full stretch mode, and the muscles are just, I mean, it is incredible looking at this animal, the power.
That single picture is what gave me the title. That showed me how indomitable that species really is. If you had asked me before we saw that action and took that picture, if I thought a jaguar was capable of such movement, I would say absolutely not.
Yeah.
That short, stocky, huge, muscle-bound animal could never leap straight up, literally, vertically in the air. And yet that's exactly what that picture shows that it's doing. It's going after a piece of bait that got caught over a tree along a river, and it's leaping straight up. When you see something like that, you can understand how animals like tigers and other species actually leap these huge 12, 15 feet walls, which are built in zoos, and people think, no way can an animal get out of that.
Yeah.
But these animals can do, and the jaguar is really incredible for doing that movement, because that's like a sumo wrestler doing it. Here's this short, very muscular, stocky animal that's just leaping straight up off the ground.
Yeah, you can understand why this animal might have a little bit of a swagger. I want you to talk about an experience you had with the poachers in Belize, but have you ever had an encounter with a live jaguar?
Oh, numerous times.
I mean, in the wild, you know what I mean?
Yes. My most memorable encounter was one I actually wrote about, both in this book and in my children's book.
Yeah.
It was when I was tracking, after I had gotten the Jaguar Preserve set up, the Prime Minister had given his approval, and we accomplished the world's first Jaguar Preserve. I had gone back just to revel in the moment, and I saw some new Jaguar tracks, because by that time, I pretty much thought I knew most, if not all, of the Jaguars in my immediate area from their tracks. And I saw a new big male track. So I started following it. I was by myself. I didn't have my field equipment, and I don't usually go in the jungle that way. But I thought, okay, I'll just follow it a short way. They were very fresh tracks, and I was hoping maybe I'd catch a glimpse of the Jaguar. Well, I'm following it, and the tracks are fresher and fresher, and I think it's just ahead and just around the bend, and then the tracks disappear. So I figured that the animal went into the jungle and was going to come out again further on down. So I keep on walking until it starts getting dark, and I realize that I can't be caught in the jungle by myself without a flashlight. So I turn around, and there's the Jaguar in back of me. So the Jaguar hadn't gone ahead to come out. It had gone in the jungle and circled back and come out in back of me quite a ways. It had been following me quite a ways,
mm-hmm.
and it could have killed me at any time. Anytime it wanted, I wouldn't even have known what had hit me. But there it was. It was just curious. It wanted to know why I was following it. And I was scared. I can't say I wasn't scared, but there was no malice in its look. It didn't take an aggressive stand. It just stood there. So there's the Jaguar blocking my trail to go back to camp. I'm blocking the Jaguar's trail to go back into the forest.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't quite know what to do. It was an amazing moment. I knew not to run, but I didn't know what to do.
A Jaguarian standoff. So what'd you do?
I actually took a few steps towards the Jaguar, thinking maybe it'll just walk away if I walk towards it. Uh-huh. But it didn't. I had just closed the gap to about 15 or 20 feet from like 25 feet. Now I was even closer to it. It could kill me even faster if it wanted to. So I thought, okay, I've got to make myself look non-threatening. I didn't know if that was right or not. I squatted down. The Jaguar sits down. So now the Jaguar is sitting, and I'm squatting, and I'm thinking, this has to give sometime, and I'm at the disadvantage. So I got scared. I stood up and started backing up, facing the Jaguar, and I trip and land on my back like a turtle, thinking,
nice.
Okay, if the Jaguar wants to kill me, now's the perfect time.
Prone position, yep. Mm-hmm.
The Jaguar just stands up. It made a little growl, a deep guttural growl, and walks towards the forest. Stops at the edge of the forest, looks back at me like I don't know what it had thought. It could have been thinking I was a pitiful specimen. And it just walked off into the jungle. It was one of the most amazing encounters I ever had.
How long did it take you to move after that?
My heart was racing, but I didn't stay that way long because I didn't know where the Jaguar was. I couldn't see it. I didn't know if it was going to wait in the jungle or maybe move ahead of me. So I got back onto my feet pretty rapidly, and without running, I started walking fast back up the trail, hoping to get away from the Jaguar.
Wow. Did you give a little wave when he went back into the forest too?
No, I didn't. I was just, it was a moment. I realized how special the moment was, yet it was mixed with fear that you can't do anything if this animal wants to harm you.
Well, obviously he knew that you're a worldwide conservationist, so that you're saving his brothers and sisters.
I hope he knew that.
We're going to talk about the poaching story the next time we have you on the program, which will be my excuse to get you back. But thanks for being on again today, and you're a great guest, and I loved your book, and the pictures were, you know, not only the writing, but the pictures were awesome.
Oh, great. Thank you for having me. I'm really pleased.
We'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Mark.
Alan Rabinowitz is the author of An Indomitable Beast, The Remarkable Journey of the Jaguar. And as you can see, he's just a great guy. We're going to take a short break here. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to skip our White House report today. We're going to be joined by Pulitzer Prize winner John Meacham. We're going to talk about Thomas Jefferson right after this.
If you're missing those political ads, Formula Ford offers you this.
It's time for a change, Vermont. Time for new and exciting, yet dependable and honest. It's time for Formula Ford. Other dealers say we gave you the best deal. Then they laugh at you in the break room when you leave. Price is very important, but on deals that are real, up front.